Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Keeping Technology Simple radio program, the show that discusses what you need to know in the world of technology in plain English. Your host, Jim Blue, a former senior corporate executive, is the president of BlueTutor.com. Jim is a technology advisor, computer tutor, public speaker, author, and a premier host of the Blog Talk Radio Network. His website is BlueTutor.com. And now, your host, Jim Blue.
And this is Jim Blue, and welcome to the show. Over the last month or so, I must be being contacted either by email or phone call about the subject of identity theft. And today, I feel privileged that we've got with us Steve Weissman, a lawyer and member of the Massachusetts Bar and Federal Bar, is one of the country's leading experts on scams and identity theft. He writes about identity theft for USA Today and has been featured on Nightline, CBS News, ABC, among others, and quoted in numerous publications, including the Associated Press, the Boston Globe, Barron's, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal. Steve has authored 8 books, including Identity Theft, 10 Rules You Must Follow to Protect Yourself from America's Crime, and Truth About Avoiding Scams. And I haven't even mentioned that he is an attorney and practices law and has time to be a professor as well. I could probably go on and on and on about your credentials, Steve, but I'd like to leave a little bit of time to talk about identity theft. Welcome to the program.
It's great to talk with you, Jim.
First of all, I guess the first question is, how widespread is identity theft? I mean, we read about it every single day and we hear it on the news, et cetera.
Interestingly enough, it is the number one consumer fraud in America. There's about 13 million or maybe even as many as 16 million, depending on your statistics, a year. But one of the things that got me is the Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics said that it is the number one property crime in America, costs about $10 billion more than the cost of all property, other property crimes combined. So it is the worst crime in America right now, more than all of the other financial crimes.
So what's the main source of identity theft? How are these scammers really getting your identity?
You know, in myriads of ways. It's high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. And, you know, many of these scams revolve around the Social Security number. The Social Security number is the key to identity theft. If you can get someone's Social Security number, you can pyramid that into a real terrible event as far as stealing that person's identity, obtaining credit in their names, getting at their accounts, sometimes even medical identity theft where you're access their medical insurance and the criminal's medical records get interspersed with the victim's criminal identity theft where someone commits a crime using your name and you can actually go to jail while you're trying to show that it isn't you. It's all kinds of ways, but predominantly they all involve getting someone's Social Security number.
But there are so many sites that we seem to go to where that's one of the identifiers that people use or companies use to see who you are. I mean, how do you protect your Social Security number?
Yeah, and it is difficult. And so, you know, there are, for instance, I went to my optometrist the other day, and he wanted to use my Social Security number as an identifier. And I'm not comfortable with that because, you know, I don't know how good his security is, and I'm questioning whether it would be that good, and small businesses are a big target. So I asked if I could use my driver's license, and he did it. And in fact, just in the last year, we've had 100 million victims of identity theft in the healthcare industry, which, as I predicted in a USA Today column at the end of last year, is going to be the largest area of the economy as far as identity theft hits. And we think that these you know, medical institutions and providers we're talking with and working with, they need our Social Security number, but they don't. They really are only taking it to make it easier to collect. But things aren't as bad as you think, Jim. They're worse. So let's say you've got a place that only asks for the last four digits of your Social Security number.
Which is very common.
Yeah. There was a study done by Carnegie Mellon in which they found that except for people, just newborns now, getting new Social Security numbers, for pretty much the entire adult population, the first three digits of your Social Security number dealt with the area of the country where you were born. The second set of digits dealt with your birth date, and the last four were the only unique ones. And so when someone asks for those last four, they can generally, on all kinds of data banks, get and predict and run through computer programs to get the rest of it. So that's not really a very safe alternative.
Well, I went to two different doctors yesterday, minor things, and in both instances, I had to fill out forms where they wanted my Social Security number, you know, and I give it to someone behind the desk who gives it to somebody else. I mean, that's no different than going out with your credit card and giving your credit card to the busboy who gives it to the bartender, who gives it to the cashier, and then it comes back to three different other people. You know, what do people do as far as, you know, I'm jumping a little bit, but credit card information. I think you mentioned in one of your blogs the difference between using debit and credit with your card, and there is a big difference.
Oh, yeah. And that is, you know, you hit, Jim, on one of my prime messages, and that is for people, when you are making purchases, use your credit card, not your debit card. A lot of people think I'm being more responsible using my debit card. I'm not running up debt. The problem is there are some very good consumer protection laws regarding credit card fraud. At the worst, you're only going to be hit with $50 of fraud. Fraudulent charges is a penalty, and frankly, even there, most companies don't charge you that. But with your debit card, if you don't notice it right away, if you're not really keeping track of your account, potentially your entire bank account to which it's tied could get stolen without any recourse. And let's say you even do report it right away. While you report that crime and right after you report that crime, you're going to lose access to your bank account while the bank investigates this crime. So use your credit card, not your debit card. But I do want to tell
you one
quick story.
I mean, you go to the grocery store, I swipe it and I hit debit. You should really be hitting credit is what you're telling us.
Yeah. Exactly. And the reason, frankly, the reason that the stores want you to use the debit is because the fees will be less for them than using the credit card. A quick story, though, about just going back to your Social Security number. And in one of my books, dealing with identity theft, dealt with that issue. What do you do when a company asks you for your Social Security number and you don't want to give it? And I used to see this thing floating around on the internet that said, when you get in that position, and we certainly don't advise people to do it, but it's interesting, they said, give them Richard Nixon's Social Security number. Nixon's the one. So there was floating around. Unfortunately, there's something called the Death Master File, and this is Social Security has kept this. They're getting better about locking the security, but it was a way that you could access, anyone could access, the Social Security number of anyone who has died. And identity thieves use this to perpetrate fraud against the deceased estate. So I went on there, easy to get at, and I looked up Richard Nixon.
What was the site again, Steve? I'm sorry. What was the site again?
It's called the Death Master File. And it's part of Social Security. And what happened was I found there the number that was supposedly floating around for Nixon's was the one that really was Richard Nixon's Social Security number. But we're not telling people to do that. However, it is there.
I love it. We've only got a few minutes left, and I want to hit, and we're going to probably have to do this again because there was this host of things to people look at. You spend quite a bit of time talking about basic rules regarding passwords. I can't tell you how many times I go to see a client, and they're using the same password for everything, which is I keep telling them not to do it, and they hate to change it. Give our listeners some basic rules to follow regarding password creation and changing them.
Great question, Jim, because it is right now we are for the moment stuck with passwords, and the hackers know that passwords are weak. They'll also break into an account of some innocuous company you're doing business with and then take that password when they hack in there and use that against your bank or other companies that you're doing with that can really cost you money. You have to have a unique password for every account, and people say, but that's difficult, and you have to have one that isn't something word from the dictionary, because a computer program will break that. So here's my way of doing that. You pick a phrase like, I don't like passwords. You've got capital letters in there. You've got small letters in there. You've got an apostrophe. Throw a couple of exclamation points at the end of it, and that's going to be your base password. So if you're going to use this for Amazon, it'll be, I don't like passwords, 3 exclamation points, AMA. You can do this and keep your passwords complex, secure, and memorable. And this is it's a good way of protecting yourself.
Now, how often should people be changing their passwords?
You know, that's a great question, too, and I say about every 6 months. And frankly, all you need to do is those 3 exclamation points, add another one. And you can then make minor changes like that. But yes, it's a good idea to change about every 6 months.
Well, that's very good advice, needless to say, for people. You know, there's a whole broad range of subjects here, which I've written down. Passwords, people should be keeping their antivirus programs up to date. You know, can you basically explain to our people the difference between a virus and malware? Because malware allows a lot of companies basically to steal information.
Yeah, actually, a virus is a type of malware, and so virus spreads infecting existing files. The malicious code itself is the malware. So malware is kind of like an umbrella term that includes viruses. But here's one important thing to know about it. We all need to have antivirus, anti-malware software, security software, and the key thing is we have to keep it up to date. Automatic updating is the best. But even if you have the most up-to-date malware, anti-malware, and antivirus software, it is always going to be about 30 days behind the bad guys. So have it on there, but don't depend on it as being your only protection. So you make sure you never click on links unless you're absolutely sure they're legitimate.
One last question I've got for you. This issue of storing passwords at sites such as Amazon, and I'm not picking on Amazon, but that's a prime example. You don't like people to do that, from what I understand.
No. I don't like people to store their passwords. I don't like people to store their credit card, because what you're doing is you're just making it – you're only as safe as the places that have your information with the weakest security and often the biggest targets. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a pain in the neck to put it in each time, but you are going to be a lot safer. Even paranoids have enemies.
I agree. Steve, this has been great. We're running out of time. We're going to do this again sometime. This is very useful information, and I thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Look forward to speaking with you again.
Great. Take care.
You've been listening to the Keeping Technology Simple radio program. If you want to reach me after the show, the phone number is 917-921-4518, or you can email me at jblue@bluetutor.com.